Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, April 1st, 2025. We begin on the front page with an article, Giving Babies a Good Start, by Matus Janik. Doulas help parents through every step at the baby fold. Just over a year into the new program, trained doulas at the baby fold have helped 19 infants come into the world and provided birth support and postpartum care for their families. I'd say that giving birth is a life-changing process, not just to the person giving birth, but the entire family. And it's not like a TV show where you can just pause it or rewind, said Sam Guillory, Vice President of Development and Public Relations for the baby fold. This is one of the most important moments of your entire life, and you don't get a do-over on that. Everything is so vitally important. So why not have all the resources available to you to make sure it's as positive or as successful of an experience as possible? The doula program is part of the Normal-based nonprofit's Healthy Start Early Intervention Program, which offers free assistance to new families from pregnancy through the first 5 years of a baby's life. Healthy Start is based at the Baby Fold's Early Childhood Services office at 318 Susan Drive in Normal. Doulas provide physical, emotional, and informational support before, during, and after childbirth. The Baby Fold's doulas are trained in labor and child development to assist Healthy Start participants with their birth plan and doctor visits. The doulas are also trained in perinatal mood disorders and postpartum depression. The Baby Fold has 3 trained doulas on staff, and although they do not replace medical staff, the doulas provide a service that many new parents might not think about when having a child. This includes support during pregnancy, labor, and the immediate postpartum period. They also focus on the mother's recovery after birth and the baby's transition into the world, as well as offering support through teaching and helping with household tasks. The Healthy Start program also offers weekly home visits to first-time parents with a range of supportive, educational, and other resources. It's based on the belief that a parent is the child's first teacher, and support workers bring insight to help parents and their baby build on that relationship and bond, said Julie Castle, doula supervisor at the Baby Fold. The program also offers family-oriented events and support groups, books for each child every month thanks to the first book, McLean County, and necessities like diapers, wipes, home safety items, blankets, clothes, pacifiers, and more. Castle said they also have postpartum bags for parents because sometimes families are so worried about the baby and other factors, they forget to pack essentials for themselves. These bags include compression socks, wipes, lip balm, pads, peri bottles, and other items, plus a bag in which to carry everything. The program also has infant simulators to show new parents the anatomy of newborns and what it will be like during childbirth, and to help instructors create care-driven learning experiences, from holding or nursing the child to helping them start on those first steps, Castle said. The leaders of the Baby Fold always wanted a doula program, Castle said, but they did not have funding until it was made possible by the Illinois State Board of Education in 2023. Now, expecting parents from McLean and Champaign counties, or those with newborns younger than 3 months old, are eligible for the Healthy Start program at no cost, and anyone can sign up to participate. Referrals typically come from hospitals, schools, or the health department, but participation is voluntary. Sometimes we're the only support somebody has during their childbirth, which is a very hard process, and we've had a couple of parents who've had medical issues after giving birth, and we were there to notice those problems and advocate for them at the hospital, Castle said. Abby Stringer, a doula with the Baby Fold, said they have Spanish and French-speaking staff members in the Healthy Start program to help with translation needs. For families who speak other languages, they have a translation application on their phone. We've had a good diversity with our families that we serve, and they might be from another country, and they're not used to how things are done in the U.S. So, being in the room with them when they have questions and just being able to help bridge that gap can mean a lot, Stinger said. Stinger, who has three children, said that she gave birth to her first child in the hospital and did not feel like she had a choice, a voice in her birthing process or in the room. For her second child, she said she had a midwife with doula training who made the experience a lot easier and more comfortable. It was that experience that motivated Stinger to become a doula at the baby fold and help others receive the same treatment, she said. Pregnancy and birth in general is beautiful, and it seemed scary to me at first on a personal level, but it doesn't have to be. Being able to be there for families and walk beside them in that pivotal moment in their life is just an amazing experience, Stinger said. Castle, who has two children, said she did not have a doula during her pregnancies, noting the concept of having a doula was not as prevalent in the late 1990s and early 2000s. Having built relationships with families and being there for them every step of the way has shown her the importance of a doula's role. I do think that they could have really helped with the comfort measure and explaining things that are happening, because even as a person who knew what was happening, I wasn't able to process that in my brain, Castle said. Now, seeing the families' faces at the end, seeing how happy they are to have their child arrive, and being at that birth every time is exciting and wonderful. For more information about the Baby Fold and the Healthy Start program, visit thebabyfold.org. Next, from Carbondale, we have Nonprofit Pairs Vets and Service Dogs by Paul Wilcoxon with the Southern Illinoisan. Four veterans took a life-changing step Friday morning as they were matched with PTSD service dogs during the ceremony at This Able Veterans Facility in Carbondale. One of the veterans, Joe Braun, said he felt overwhelmed when he met his service dog, Able. "It's a big step going forward, breaking out of where I've been and hoping to go somewhere better," Braun said. Braun, a Marine Corps and National Guard veteran from Indiana, put off applying for nearly a year because he hesitated. "Now that I'm here, I can't believe how much they've already done for me and what they're about to do," Braun said. This Able veteran, a nonprofit based in Southern Illinois, has spent the last 14 years pairing military veterans struggling with trauma wounds with specially trained service dogs. But the dogs are only half the equation. The veterans also take part in a comprehensive trauma resiliency course designed to give them tools for navigating life with PTSD. Behesha Doan is the organization's founder and head trainer. She says the real magic begins now. "The development of the service dog is one part," she said. "The moment marked the beginning of a three-week trauma resiliency program in which the veterans will train, bond, and build trust with their new canine partners. According to officials with This Able Veterans, the relationships have the potential to be both healing and life-saving. What makes the program life-changing," Doan said, "is helping veterans build practical skills, understand their trauma, and learn how to work alongside their service dogs." Doan said the need for programs like theirs has only grown. "Many veterans coming back living lives very different from how they left, and the wounds they carry can be profound. The service dogs and the bond that's created can be a powerful force in helping them heal," Doan said. Friday's ceremony marked the start of that process for four new veterans, each with a dog trained for the last 18 months. Matching a dog to a veteran is no small task. "We don't just hand over a dog and hope it works out," Doan said. "These dogs are trained specifically to meet the needs of their partner." But even more than that, Doan said, they look for veterans who are truly ready for a change. She said that's when a service dog can really make a difference. Brad Lamb, a Carbondale native and Marine veteran, knows firsthand how deep that impact can go. In 2022, he was matched with his dog Charity. "She saved me," Lamb said. "There were times I started going down the rabbit hole again, and if it wasn't for her, I probably wouldn't be here. Lamb said Charity can sense when something's wrong even before he does, grounding him and pulling him out of moments that used to spiral. She's more than a dog. She's a lifeline, he said. It's not just the dog, though. It's everything they teach you here. This program gave me tools I didn't even know I needed. As Braun looked ahead to his weeks of training with his new dog, he felt cautious hope. I think the freedom and safety I'm hoping to gain with Abel is a lot better than I would have been able to achieve on my own, he said. For Lamb, the message to other veterans is that it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to get help, he said. I grew up in the suck it up mindset, and that nearly broke me. But this saved me. In other local news, we have Gibson City woman ID'd in fatal crash near Fairbury by Matus Janik. The Livingston County Coroner's Office has identified a 67-year-old woman who died Saturday after a fatal crash just south of Fairbury. Coroner Michael Renner identified Jerry Lee Inghausen of Gibson City, who was pronounced dead at 4:40 p.m. at the scene of the crash. The crash took place at approximately 4:20 p.m. Saturday at the intersection of 600 North Road and 2200 East Road in Livingston County. A 19-year-old man was driving an SUV east on 600 North Road when he failed to stop at the stop sign at the intersection of 2200 East Road, according to the Livingston County Sheriff's Office. He struck a second SUV that was traveling north on 2200 East Road. Inghausen was a passenger in the second vehicle. Both vehicles sustained extensive front-end damage and left the roadway, and the second vehicle hit a utility pole. The Fairbury Fire Department and ambulances were dispatched to the scene, along with the Fairbury Police Department and Livingston County Sheriff's Office. The Illinois State Police Accident Reconstruction Unit was also called to the scene to provide support. Initial autopsy results indicate Inghausen died from blunt force injuries she received in the crash. The driver of the vehicle she was traveling in was airlifted to a Peoria hospital because of his injuries. He is stable but remains in the intensive care unit. The 19-year-old driver and his passenger, who was a child, were taken to a local hospital for treatment and have been released. He was issued a citation by the Livingston County Sheriff's Office for disobeying a stop sign. The sheriff and coroner's office are investigating the incident. Next, we have the third annual Young Entrepreneur Market Set by Olivia Jacobs. Bloomington Normal's third annual Young Entrepreneur Market will be held Saturday, April 12th at Corpus Christi Catholic School at 1909 East Lincoln Street in Bloomington. The event will feature 49 booths and 69 children ages 5 to 17 who will be selling and marketing their products and services, including jewelry, custom hats, plushies, trading cards, art, and more. The aim of the market is to help children and young adults get real-world business experience and highlight the influence of small businesses, according to a news release for the free event. Awards will be given for Best Business Pitch and Best Booth Competitions at each age level. The grand prize winner will win a booth at the Gingerbread House Toys in Bloomington to sell their items on a future date. While sign-ups for the market are closed, it is open to the public to attend. Event hosts are Kristen Booth and Amy Gamelgard, co-owners of the Community Lab, LLC. Vivian Kong, doctora, owner of Bao Destination, co-owner of Beyond Social and co-owner of Kobe's Revolving Sushi. And Alyssa Conley, an intern and junior entrepreneur. And junior entrepreneurship student at Illinois Wesleyan University. We have country artist Gabby Barrett to perform July 18th in Bloomington. Country music singer Gabby Barrett will perform at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts at 7 p.m. Friday, July 18th. Barrett is known for her hit singles Pick Me Up, The Good Ones, and the record-breaking I Hope, which spent 27 weeks at the top of the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart. The success of I Hope made her the youngest artist with the number one debut on country radio station in over 20 years, according to a news release from the BCPA. Barrett's newest single, Dance Like No One's Watching, from the album Chapter and Verse, was written by Luke Combs. A ticket pre-sale for the show will begin on Thursday, with the general sale starting at 10 a.m. Friday, April 4th. Tickets start at $36. And in business news, we have Rivian spins out a new startup. Also, Inc., focused on small, lightweight EVs, by Queenie Wong with the LA Times. Rivian Automotive, known for the large electric trucks it manufactures in Normal, is setting its sights on small and lightweight vehicles. The California-based automaker said last week that it is spinning out its micro-mobility business into a new startup called Also Inc. Micro-mobility encompasses a variety of vehicles, including electric bikes, scooters, and skateboards. Rivian, which employs over 8,000 workers who produce all of its electric trucks, SUVs, and commercial delivery vans at the Normal manufacturing facility, said in a news release that it started working on micro-mobility several years ago and concluded that business should be its own company. Rivian didn't specify what type of products the startup plans to release or when. For the world to fully transition to electrified transportation, a range of vehicle types and form factors will be needed, R.J. Scaringe, Rivian founder and chief executive, said in a statement. The move comes as Rivian aims to grow its business while facing challenges such as supply chain woes, regulations, and consumers wary about spending money amid economic uncertainty. Scaringe previously hinted that Rivian was working on micromobility. He said at TechCrunch's Disrupt conference in 2022 that the company planned to move to even smaller vehicles. In 2023, he told staff, Rivian was developing an electric bike, Bloomberg reported. Rivian said it has, quote, substantial minority ownership stake in Also, which will be based in Palo Alto. Scaringe will serve as the chairman of the startup's board of directors. Venture capital fund Eclipse Ventures is investing $105 million in Also. The company declined to provide further details about the venture. Rivian has also been working on a mid-size SUV with 5 seats that starts at $45,000, a lower price compared to its larger vehicles. Known as the R2, the SUV is expected to be delivered to customers in the first half of 2026. In 2024, Rivian reported annual revenue of nearly $5 billion and a net loss of $1.2 billion, according to its quarterly financial results. The company's finances have been improving as losses have narrowed. The company reported a gross profit of $170 million in the fourth quarter of 2024, compared to a loss of $606 million during the same period of 2023. Rivian expects to deliver 46,000 to 51,000 vehicles in 2025. Athan Yanos writes, school sex assaults targeted. Bipartisan efforts seeks stricter protections. Even after the family of a victim of sexual assault from Taylorville obtained an emergency order of protection, the school still allowed the young girl's assailant to attend the same school and merely moved him to a different school bus with younger students. It was only after 3 weeks of filing multiple orders of protection in court and advocating on their daughter's behalf that the girl's parents were able to get the assailant removed from their daughter's school. In response to this mishandled incident, State Senator Stephen McClure, a Republican from Springfield, introduced a bill in January to help combat sexual violence and protect victims in Illinois schools. That bill, Senate Bill 98, was not assigned to a committee before the Senate committee deadline on March 21st, a necessary step in becoming a law. But McClure said he has not given up hope for the bill and has filed a letter requesting an extension on the bill past the deadline this session. It's still very much in play, McClure said. Wednesday about the bill, which has gained bipartisan support. Senate Bill 98 would amend the Illinois school code to implement a mandatory one-year expulsion for any public school student who is determined by that district school board to have committed sexual assault, sexual harassment, or engaged in a sexual activity without the consent of the other person. The bill specifies that it will include instances of sexual assault that occur in school or during any activities or events that, quote, bear a reasonable relationship to the school, close quote. Approximately 82% of women in the United States have experienced sexual assault or sexual harassment, and 56% of women have experienced sexual assault before they turned 18, according to a 2024 study by Stop the Hate, a nonprofit organization dedicated to documenting and ending gender-based street harassment worldwide. McClure said he filed the bill after a 10-year-old girl at Taylorville Junior High School in his district was sexually assaulted multiple times on her school bus by a 14-year-old boy and then later sexually assaulted again by that same boy at their school bus stop after the school did not take measures to separate the two students. I filed the bill to stick up for these kids. It's not fair for somebody who gets raped to have to go to school the next day on the school bus with the same person who did that, McClure said. Illinois already has a mandatory expulsion requirement in place for any student who has possession of a firearm, a knife, or brass knuckles when used or attempted to be used to cause bodily harm. Senate Bill 98 would upgrade sexual assault to the same level of severity as those offenses. The mother of the young Taylorville girl who was assaulted has advocated for the bill. We have laws where a student gets expelled for bringing a weapon on school grounds. For my daughter, this young man's body was his weapon, and he continually brought his weapon to school, on the bus and to the bus stop, she said, at a Capitol News conference earlier this year. This is not acceptable. Officials at Taylorville Junior High School declined to comment on Senate Bill 98 and their handling of the girl's case. Senator Terry Bryant, a Republican from Murfreesboro, who signed on as a co-sponsor to the bill, said that she supports the mandatory one-year expulsion but wishes it was more severe because of the high risk that many young girls face of being sexually assaulted. They shouldn't be allowed to go back to a public school because students should be safe when they are at a public school, Bryant said. I have two sisters, and all three of us were sexually abused, so 100% of the girls in my immediate family were sexually assaulted. Senator Jill Tracy, a Republican from Quincy, a chief co-sponsor, said her decision to support the bill was largely influenced by a similar incident that happened in her school district, where a young girl was sexually assaulted by an older student on a school bus. The boy who allegedly assaulted the girl was still allowed to ride the bus with her, she said. The school officials didn't like it, but they didn't really have tools to deal with it, Tracy said. She later explained that the girl was given a scholarship to attend a different school, but still had to provide her own transportation to that school. Carrie Ward, who is the CEO of the Illinois Coalition Against Sexual Assault and has publicly backed the bill, said her group is routinely contacted by students who have been sexually assaulted in a school or in a school-related setting. Although Ward explained that she does not know whether the bill will help prevent further instances of sexual assault, she believes it will elevate the importance of addressing sexual assault in school and acknowledging its prevalence. Senate Majority Leader Kimberly Lightford, Democrat from Mayfield, one of the chief co-sponsors of the bill, and the chair of assignments, said in a statement to Capitol News Illinois that while she fully supports the bill, she is continuing to review legislation filed. This measure opens the door for crucial conversations about how schools address sexual assault cases, Lightford said. Our top priority is protecting and serving our state's young people. McClure said he has worked with the Illinois Education Association, the powerful teachers union that is backing the bill, and several other educational organizations to craft amendments to the bill, which he plans to file as soon as the bill is assigned to a committee. McClure said the amendments would give a school's superintendent and members of the school board authority to make changes in an expulsion on a case-by-case basis, which McClure said was necessary to prevent court challenges to the legislation. Also, he said the amendments would more clearly define sexual assault to account for the fact that in most schools, students are at an age where they cannot give consent. Senator Julie Morrison, a Democrat from Lake Forest, said she believes the bill addresses a bipartisan issue in an important way. If there's one thing we can agree on, it's that students should feel safe at school, said Morrison, who is also a chief co-sponsor. Looking at healthcare, nationwide we have nurses push back against AI. The next time you're due for a medical exam, you may get a call from someone like Anna, a friendly voice that can help you prepare for your appointment and answer any pressing questions you might have. With her calm, warm demeanor, Anna is trained to put patients at ease, like many nurses across the United States. Unlike them, she is available to chat 24/7 in multiple languages from Hindi to Haitian Creole. That's because Anna isn't human, but an artificial intelligence program created by Hippocratic AI, one of a number of new companies offering ways to automate time-consuming tasks usually performed by nurses and medical assistants. Hundreds of hospitals use increasingly sophisticated computer programs to monitor patients' vital signs, flag emergency situations, and trigger step-by-step action plans for care, jobs previously handled by nurses and other health professionals. Hospitals say AI is helping their nurses work more efficiently while addressing burnout and understaffing. However, nursing unions argue that this poorly understood technology is overriding nurses' expertise and degrading the quality of care. Hospitals have been waiting for the moment when they have something that appears to have enough legitimacy to replace nurses, said Michelle Mahon of National Nurses United. The entire ecosystem is designed to de-skill and ultimately replace caregivers. Mahon's group, the largest nursing union in the U.S., helped organize more than 20 demonstrations at hospitals across the country, pushing for the right to have a say in how AI can be used and protection from discipline if nurses decide to disregard the automated advice. The group raised new alarms in January when Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the incoming health secretary, suggested AI nurses, quote, are as good as any doctor, close quote, could help deliver care in rural areas. Earlier this month, Dr. Mehmet Oz, nominated to oversee Medicare and Medicaid, said he believes AI can, quote, liberate doctors and nurses from all the paperwork. Hippocratic AI initially promoted a rate of $9 an hour for its AI assistants, compared with about $40 an hour for a registered nurse. It's since dropped that language, instead touting its services and seeking to assure customers that they were carefully tested. The company did not request grant requests for an interview. Adam Hart was working in the emergency room at Dignity Health in Henderson, Nevada, when the hospital's computer system flagged a newly arrived patient for sepsis, a life-threatening reaction to infection. Under the hospital's protocol, he was supposed to immediately administer a large dose of IV fluids. Hart determined he was treating a dialysis patient or someone with kidney failure. Such patients have to be carefully managed to avoid overloading their kidneys with fluid. He raised this concern with the supervising nurse, but was told to follow the standard protocol. Only after a nearby physician intervened did the patient instead begin to receive a slow infusion of IV fluids. Quote, you need to keep your thinking cap on. That's why you're being paid as a nurse, Hart said. Turning over our thought processes to these devices is reckless and dangerous. Michelle Collins, Dean of Loyola University's College of Nursing, says, it would be foolish to turn our back on this idea completely. We should embrace what it can do to augment our care, but we should also be careful it doesn't replace the human element. And with that, we conclude the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, April 1st, 2025. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.